Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics, with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist.
Well, Mark, great to be with you again. I hear that music and it always puts a smile on my face. It's a great, fun introduction that we have. And another great episode of Informed Dissent, available on all the podcast outlets, including Apple Podcasts. We have a wonderful guest with us tonight, we've both known her for a while. She's a frontline doc who's been battling this tyranny right along with us, and that's Dr. Lee Merritt, who is an orthopedic surgeon, and she spent a whole bunch of time serving our country in the military. So, Dr. Merritt, welcome to Informed Dissent.
I love it. Thank you. I love the title.
Before we get started, first of all, tell us a little bit about your bio. Give our audience some history about who you are and why you're doing this. You could be doing anything right now. You could be hanging out at a beach, traveling, relaxing, but here you are in the middle of the fight against tyranny.
Well, yeah, of course, the beach is a little hard in Iowa, but especially when it's 10 degrees as it is right now. But no, I mean, I trained in Rochester, New York, and at that time, this is kind of a joke, now medical school is $50,000 a year, but back then we thought it was outrageously expensive at a private medical school for $7,500. So I took a Navy scholarship, thought I was going to be a cardiologist. I did a year of internal medicine and then went out to the fleet for a couple years and realized I really liked orthopedics better. So I ended up doing a residency in orthopedics, spent a total of 9.5 years, got out, did a spine fellowship back at the University of Rochester. And so I was in the practice of trauma and spine surgery for 25 years. Along the way, I got mugged by Medicare, and I was one of those people that never even voted. I mean, I just thought, oh, we'll leave those to the experts. Well, I've learned what happens when you do that. So a friend of mine heard me complaining in the surgeon's lounge one day and said, you need to join the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You'd be perfect. We believe in private practice medicine, that the medicine is between a doctor and a patient, not between a doctor and a government bureaucrat and a patient. So I said, okay, I'm all in. And that really changed my, I mean, I learned so much from those guys and got active, started writing things and reading things. And one thing led to another. And, you know, over the years, I've written for WorldNet Daily and Human Events and on the point that we should have ethical, patient-centered medical care and that governments generally are hazardous to your health when it comes to medical care. So that's kind of, so when this whole thing broke out, I'd already been. And the other thing I would say that kind of prepared me for this is that after 9/11, I started hearing all this stuff. I'd spent, besides being in the Navy, I served on a congressional subcommittee when we were in D.C., and it was the Navy Research Advisory Committee, and they look at defense technology for the Navy, and by law, they had to have a doctor on it. And I went around talking to different people about stuff and researching stuff, and I ran into an old friend of mine that had been researching the Gulf War syndrome. And I, being an orthopedic surgeon, vaccines are not something I really thought too much about. I got vaccinated in the Navy, you know, wasn't thinking too much about it. But then I saw what happened, and it really kind of shook me that we would do this. And I don't know if you know the story, but basically, the guys, after much sleuthing, they figured out, at first they thought it was psychological because there wasn't one good symptom. I mean, it was kind of all over the place. But then these guys with the Gulf War syndrome started coming back with ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, a fatal neurologic disease, at 4 times the background rate. And that's still going on, by the way. Those guys are still at risk. Well, they looked and looked, and they finally found out it was one batch of the anthrax vaccine, and it was under EUA, just like these are, the emergency use authorization, a new adjuvant that had never been used in humans before, and it was called squalene. Well, the people that had loved ones damaged and things, they went to the FDA and the CDC, and they said, we never want that squalene stuff in our vaccines, and we were assured, oh no, you're crazy anti-vaxxers, you'll never get that in your vaccine, until they put it, and I think it was 2016, they put it in the Fluad that they were mandating the nurses to take. And I thought to myself at the time, because the nurses came to me and asked me about mandates for flu vaccine. I said, mandates are never ethical. We don't force anyone to have a medical treatment of any kind. That's not what we do. That's never right. And so I decided, I'll look into this. And I looked into the literature and realized there was no evidence that made a difference to transmission in the hospital or patient well-being. And then I found that. And not only did they put the squalene in that vaccine, they secreted it in. I mean, they slipped it in under their lab term. Didn't call it squalene, they called it MF59. And so it sounds more like an El Salvadorian drug gang. So even if your doctor knew about squalene, he wouldn't know about MF59 probably. So what is going on here? And as this thing has been rolled out on us with very, very similar but broader consequences, I was down in Florida at the Villages and I gave a talk and, you know, some little old lady would come up to me and say, you know, how about my shingles? Should I take my shingles vaccine? And I would say, look at knowing what I know now about the pharmaceutical industry and the psychopaths that run this, I'm not buying toothpaste from these people. Don't trust them right now. We don't know. But that's my point, is that really woke me up, is I thought, what kind of psychopaths, knowing that they put something in a vaccine that caused ALS, very convincingly, by the way, I mean, the damaged people, 96.2%, I think, had positive anti-squalene antibodies, zero in the control group. So this wasn't mishy-mashy numbers. And they put it in the flu ad and then mandated people get it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about vaccines. You know, you're one of the brightest physicians that I know, and I've read your writings and I've heard your lectures. You're an avid researcher, et cetera. Bring us up to date on your thoughts on what's going on with the COVID vaccine.
Well, first of all, I think as well-meaning physicians, that we all have science backgrounds, that we were all, you know, trained a lot. People want to, I was just on another podcast in Europe or in Canada, and it's like well-meaning physicians keep scratching their heads saying, what is this all about? How could they be doing this? How, you know, and I kind of have to take a step back and just say, look, I put my military hat on, former military hat on, say, we're at war. Don't try and think this out as if this is a normal medical evolution. It's not. And I personally have come to the conclusion early on that, first of all, I think it's extremely provable and shouldn't be doubted at this point that this pathogen, this spike protein, is made in a lab. It was taken, sure, they take things from nature. They take the DNA or RNA from nature, but they developed it in a lab to be an upregulated biopathogen, which by definition makes it a bioweapon. And if that's a bioweapon, so is the vaccine, because the vaccine says, what is this? It's the RNA that reproduces the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 in the body. Well, if one's a bioweapon, so is the other. And I think we should, if we look at it from that aspect, you get a better picture, I think, of what's going on.
The more I learn about this COVID vaccine, and quite frankly, the vaccine industry in general, the more skeptical I am about recommending any vaccine for anybody to get. And I've seen as a primary care physician multiple patients that have been injured by this COVID-19 vaccine in all different age groups. And although statistically speaking, there may be a reduction in severity of disease or hospitalizations or so forth, they never also talk about what are the side effects and injuries that are occurring. And as you know, you look at the VAERS system and we're somewhere around 19,000 deaths that are now associated with this vaccine. And you always have to weigh that, like everything we do in medicine. What are the risks? What are the benefits? What are the alternatives to whatever treatment we're recommending? And then make an informed decision. But nobody is doing that. Nobody's talking about early treatment. Nobody's talking about the various protocols that we all have used successfully for early treatment. They're only talking about vaccine as the path forward, masking up the entire population. And even today, I mean, I had this happen today. A patient who actually wasn't a patient, but a friend of a friend who's been sick with COVID, and they show up at the hospital ill. And the first thing they want to do is admit him and give him remdesivir. And that's the only treatment that they talk about. The standard of care in too much of this country right now, as we sit here tonight, is stay at home, isolate yourself. And if you feel like you're going to die, then go to the hospital. And we'll help that process by giving you remdesivir. Unfortunately, yeah, and a sedative, right. And unfortunately, nobody is screaming other than us and a handful of docs across the country. But of course, we're called names and our videos and talks and writings are suppressed. Nobody is talking about early treatment. I mean, listen, even if you take the controversial stuff, I don't think they're controversial, but if you took ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine completely off the table, we still have very effective early treatment protocols as something as simple as a nose, throat, you know, irrigation system that Peter McCullough has been pushing, and I've now incorporated that into my protocol. Even the monoclonal antibodies that are in short supply, inhaled budesonide, and the various sequenced treatment strategies is still radio silent. I've yet to hear Dr. Fauci mention a word about the importance of early treatment, or for that matter, vitamin D. And it's literally medical tyranny that's going on, and it's hard to understand why. It really is.
Well, they're killing us by omission, like you said, vitamin D, and by commission. And although they want to say there's no evidence for ivermectin, there's only one study for remdesivir, and it showed a 21% renal failure. And it didn't really help that much. I mean, it helped maybe a little bit, they said, but it was a small study, and it was a huge mortality later from the renal failure. So we have now 76, the IVMmeta.com data. There are 76 studies now of ivermectin, many of which over half are peer-reviewed. Last one being from Brazil with 220,000 people, over 50% reduction in death and hospitalization. I mean, these are not mishy-mashy numbers. And to deny all that is criminal of itself. But here shows you what they're really all about. It's not about not liking ivermectin. It's not about hydroxychloroquine because Trump mentioned it. They really don't want us to treat these people. They really want a death count. And I came up to that conclusion when I was in Ohio speaking. Now, in Iowa, you can see what's happening because first the chain pharmacies wouldn't prescribe ivermectin or wouldn't dispense ivermectin. No problem. We went to the local non-chain pharmacies. Then when people started trying to get it from overseas, the FDA told the Postal Service to confiscate and destroy this drug, which is on the WHO most essential list and has been used for generations, millions if not billions of doses, to cure blind or to prevent blindness and malnutrition the world over. This is not a drug that we don't know something about. We know a lot about this drug and it's very safe. On the other hand, they're destroying it coming into America. And then now they're going after the doctors who are prescribing it in spite of all that. They're now sending out disinformation letters from the medical board investigator. But when I was in Ohio, I discovered that holds true. Plus, in Ohio, they can't even prescribe azithromycin and doxycycline without being looked at. And I said to this doctor, are you kidding me? Are you afraid? How do you treat acne? You can't treat acne. And he laughed and he said, not really. I can give one or two pills. Now, what does that say is really going on here? Even for the most open-minded person that doesn't want to think that Fauci is anything but a good guy and all these people are just maybe bumbling, but they're trying to do the best job. That's not what's happening. It clearly, they don't want us to treat people and save people.
You talk about the death count, and you know we are constantly bombarded by a death count nightly on the news as the numbers increase. Even if you realize that many of these deaths have nothing to do with COVID, they're with COVID. But nonetheless, those numbers are put forward. Why do you think that is?
Well, again, this is a big psyop. Now, I don't think it was all a psyop. I'm of the impression that the whole thing was started with a pathogen that was developed in the lab that we called a spike protein that got people sick and got the ball rolling. But then that kind of petered out in the population, and that's a technical answer I can give you later. As that petered out, they weren't going to have a death count. So then they had to do something to make everybody afraid. And what they did is start counting cases. And it's a big psychological operation. So one of the psychological operations is they locked us down. They said lockdown. Now, that's not a word of medicine. That's a jailer's term. And we've never quarantined the well. But first they put us in, they did what Albert Biederman after the Korean War said are classic psychological manipulations. They isolated the victim. That's all of us. We put us in lockdowns. Then they monopolized our perception and they told us all this stuff on the news that made it sound really scary. But what was really happening, because we've looked back now at 2020, you can look back, maybe not, you know, they manipulate the COVID numbers. You can claim something's COVID or not COVID. Who knows about those? But one thing you can't fudge is all-cause mortality. And now those numbers are coming in, and they are supporting what we've been saying. So in 2020, the all-cause mortality for the world, this is from the UN, was 7.612 per thousand. But in 2015, the all-cause mortality was 7.818 per thousand. It was either 15, somewhere between 11 and 15, that was it. And in fact, between 1950 and 2015, that death rate has always been higher than what we saw in 2020.
Dr. Merritt, explain to our audience what all-cause mortality means.
It means the total death. In other words, the problem we had was, and everybody heard the joke about, and it wasn't a joke, about the guy who dies in a motorcycle accident, but because he tested positive, they called him a COVID death. Well, we can all figure that that's going to jerk around the numbers if that happens. Or, you know, the Cuomo effect in New York, or all these different things. There's various reasons that the numbers might be exaggerated or not exaggerated. But the one thing you can't cheat on is all-cause mortality is how many people died last year in New York State? How many people died in America? How many people died in the world? Well, we have death counts from death, you know, paperwork, and it has to go through systems, and those systems report up the chain, and it goes to the UN eventually. So those numbers have been kept for decades and decades, and so we know that the all-cause mortality in 2020 was below 1950 to 2015. So there was no pandemic, but what is happening this year? This is the other part. Again, they don't want to blame anything on the vaccine. These soccer players dropping over, the young children dying of myocarditis, the, you know, old people dying of brain bleeds. Nothing is ever related to the vaccine. But let's look at all-cause mortality. The UN, the ONS in Britain has reported that if you are between the ages of 18 and 64, all-cause mortality, meaning the total death count, is up for almost 40%. And that very same number came out of Indiana. This insurance company in Indiana, his CEO started squeaking, and he has actuaries. And these are the specialists in numbers. These are the guys that live or die. Insurance companies live or die by actuarial data. How many people die, what they die of, how long you live, what's your risk of having a femur fracture during that time, all the things they might have to pay out funds by. And what did they show? All-cause mortality is up unprecedented 40% in their company this year. Now, that's a disaster for the insurance company. And in fact, the guy said, in 200 years, we look at 200 years of risk, and we think that a 10% bump in mortality is a huge nightmare. And now they have a 40%. Now, what's different in 2021 than 2020? And if anybody jumps up and says it's Delta or Omicron, I'm going to just spit. But this is just about, we've been giving the vaccine in 2021.
I'm curious. What it sounds like what you're suggesting is that before the vaccines came out, we were told that we were all dying of a virus, and the numbers don't bear that out. After the vaccine came out, we were all told that we were going to be saved by the vaccine, but the numbers don't bear that out either, because all-cause mortality, in other words, the total number of people that died since the vaccine came out, has actually increased. Is that correct?
That is exactly what I'm saying. And there's some very, you know, the simplest explanation is not Omicron. It's not Delta. And there's technical reasons why, and I can tell you, I think that that's where I raise the BS flag, because I know how this thing was made, the so-called vaccines, and what the vaccine researchers said when they were working on this, you know, in the lab. But here's the case study that should just wake people up. The South Pole. You know, I was in the Navy, and we supplied the doctor for our South Pole expedition every year. My friend from orthopedic training, he was the doctor one winter. And they winter over. And what they do is they have to be completely screened. They have to be completely healthy and in good shape. And they go to the South Pole, and they're completely isolated with that group of people until they get out. In fact, one time we had a Navy doc who got breast cancer, discovered her own breast cancer out there, but they couldn't get her off the ice. I mean, you can't get there during the winter. So this year, the Belgian contingent went down. Now this, they had 25 people. They were completely, you know, vaccinated, you know, multiple vaccines to the yin yang, whatever it was. And they were tested till they were just, their nose was raw. So they were tested completely, made sure they didn't have COVID. They weren't going to be infectious. They go down to the South Pole, and what happens? 2/3 of them now are reported with COVID. Now, I'm not quite sure if they mean just positive or they mean that they're sick, but in any case, according to the experts, none of that should happen. How can you get it? You've completely been protected. You've got the vaccine. Now, that is a study that's like a petri dish. I mean, that is the perfect study to make the lie here. And it just reinforces what we see around the world. The most highly vaccinated countries have the most disease and problems, specifically COVID. And then I love it when this, I can't remember where it was in Africa, Nigeria, or someplace in Africa, only 6% of the people are vaccinated. And it's like, quote, experts are just flabbergasted and don't understand how this could be because they're doing well and they have the lowest vaccine rate. Here's the principle. Where the vaccine goes, death follows. Death and disease follow. Yeah. Iceland, highly vaccinated, lots of COVID. Now India, down. They use ivermectin. It's a pretty simple equation here.
So what do you think the path forward is out of this pandemic?
I think there are really two problems. One is that, you know, whatever's going on, we cannot live in our basements. Everybody has to realize that life needs socialization, human interaction. We cannot, isolation is not ever going to work in the long term, even if you believed it worked in 2 weeks. It's an anti-human agenda and you can't stand for it. So the first thing we need to do is wake up and realize the path forward has to be something that does not involve human damage. And Dr. McDonald, I know, talks about the suicidal ideation in his children and things like this. We've damaged a generation or two of us. Done with that, we have to not comply. So the first thing we do as adults is take our world back and take charge of things and say, we're not leaving the world to unelected medical technocrats, which have an agenda, who are being paid by the people who are getting $1,000 a minute for selling you these poisons. Don't listen to them anymore. Stop wearing a mask. Stop social distancing or anti-social distancing. Stop doing this, nonsense stuff that they're having you do, and just use common sense. Let's look at this. Masks don't work. You can't go back to what they were having you do with this lockdown and everything. And then I think the second thing we have, and I would say stop taking the vaccine. That if you tell me that the year before the vaccine of COVID has far less death than this year, which it does actuarially right now, don't tell me you're making the world a better place. It's just that simple. I mean, it's not worth it, especially you can maybe, I wouldn't even argue for any age group getting it, but certainly not young people. And then I think we have to figure out how we got here. And how we come out of it militarily, because there's another problem that nobody's really talking about. We're the military that has vaccinated everybody. I mean, we and the Australians, we just vaccinated like over 70% of our army. We're vaccinating against all principles of military safety principles in the past. We're vaccinating pilots. But the Chinese aren't vaccinating their military with these genetic agents, nor are the Russians. So we're kind of in a national security nightmare right now, in my opinion. And so we have to take a look at that, the people that are in charge. And the rest of us, I think, have to look at how we never let this happen again. You know, after World War II, we brought the Project Paperclip people over from Germany. And a similar thing in Japan we don't talk about very much. But the myth is that we all looked at these... that we were looking at the German rocket scientists. But really, what we were looking at, too, were chemists and especially vaccine chemists. When the bomb went off, you know, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we realized we'd entered the nuclear age, we paid so much attention to the technology and Wernher von Braun and the rocket guys. You know, the technology is what we focused on in the news. We should have been focusing probably on the fact that a small group of people gained the ability, once they got ICBMs and all the stuff that they developed in under our DOD funding, once they did all that, we had a small group of people that could annihilate the whole world. And we still do. We are in that, we have entered now the age of synthetic biology where you don't even need a nation state to attack your country and murder your people. It takes a handful of people with a lot of funding and a lot of ability to buy propaganda and to spread out pathogens. The age of, I will tell you that the DOD and DARPA and those guys, they are the biggest funders of nanotechnology. And there's a big thing, Army, MIT cooperation. People need to read this stuff. Just go browse around and they'll find that if you marry bioweapons to nanotechnology, it's a really a frightening world. And the way you stop that is stop funding the beast. And to take down people, don't let a small cabal rule us. And you can't give the light our world over to medical technocrats because they are the cabal of this. It may sound conspiratorial, but I don't care at this point.
Dr. Merritt, what I am sort of taking away from what you're saying is that we've really been lied to for a very long time. We've been given truly false information by the very entities that we are told to trust, which is our government, our politicians, and to some degree, pharmaceutical companies, healthcare organizations, doctors, physicians. And a question that I often receive when people speak to me and ask me, what do I do? How do I know who to trust? And I tell them, well, everyone's really been lying for the last couple of years. The response is, well, where do I get good information? Where do I get what's true? How do you respond to that question?
That's a really good question. And that's what happens in an information war. So the first thing I would say is they planned it this way. And we can argue who they are, the people in the shadows that are running this with big money and big tech. But it was planned to be that way. And you can go back into a book called Quiet Weapons for Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, where they talk about these, you know, not just directed energy weapons, but these kind of social automation weapons that they can use against the public that, number one, the public won't realize they're being attacked. Number two, they won't have the technical expertise to know whom to believe. And number three, they won't know how to associate for defense. That's exactly what this says. And that's exactly what the Chinese army in their doctrine talk about. This is multidimensional unrestricted warfare. So my advice is the first thing you do is look who owns whom. You know, in 1943, I don't think you would have asked the German, Goebbels propaganda arm, nor Tokyo Rose, nor the Japanese television for information about what was going on. It just that you'd recognize it was propaganda. Let's look around that the pharmaceutical companies and the people that are probably not your friends here own all the mainstream media. So if you decide to, you're just going to listen to mainstream media, we really can't help you. You're going to have to look to independent sources. One thing to look at, for example, are the fact checkers. Dr. Zelenko sent me a patent number the other day, and he said, I know I'm over the target because the minute I talked about this, the fact checkers came out. And as an intelligence officer said to me one time, you know, when you see fact checkers come out and they all suddenly come out of the woods and they all say the same thing, that person's not right, not right, not right, false, 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 false. They might vary the words a little bit. That's an intelligence program. That's what he told me. And that's basically what Zelenko was having happen to him. So you have to learn, you have to get street smart. You know, there are a lot of very, very bright PhDs and scientists and stuff, but they're just not very street smart. And, you know, I think that's, you have to be looking at this as a battlefield. How are you going to negotiate through it? And the first thing you don't do is listening to people that profit on your fear.
Where can people learn more about you if they want to follow your writings, your podcast, and various activities that you're involved in?
Oh, well, thanks. I have a website. It's themedicalrebel.com, three words, themedicalrebel.com. And I have a Wednesday night, 6 o'clock in Central Time, TV show on Brighteon now. And, you know, I'm kind of around talking to people like you guys, and so that's what I do.
Wonderful. And how about your podcast?
Oh, now the podcast comes through my website. So they can come can join the podcast if they'd like to do that. And that would be great. Help support the war effort.
So what's on the calendar for 2022 for Dr. Lee Merritt?
Well, the first thing is a lot of us got letters from our state medical boards kind of all sent out around the same date, charging us with disseminating misinformation about COVID. So I got to deal with that issue with the legal arm. And other than that, I'm just doing what I'm doing now. I'm just trying to get people and you know, speak to people and have them come on my podcast. We have to disseminate, like you said. Who do you trust? Well, you have to listen to the people that don't have a dog in this fight. Don't listen to the people that are getting paid $1 million a year to lie to you.
Our podcast is literally heard all around the world, from Australia to Europe, of course, in America and so forth. So what's your message to the freedom-loving people that are listening to this from various corners of the world?
Well, I would not be disheartened. I personally have a feeling that things are starting to crumble. Boris Yeltsin once said when he was standing, I love that, I remember seeing this happen. He was standing on the steps of the Russian White House and there were tanks pointed at him. And he said, he pointed something at him and he said, you know, you can sit on a throne of bayonets, but you can't sit on it for long. And this is a big lie about to come down. And yeah. I tell people, if you don't run out and get a vaccine, don't give up now. Don't think, oh, I'm just going to get over with this and just live my life. It doesn't work that way. We're in a fight for our children, for humanity, and don't give up, because we're kind of going through a tunnel. And I heard someone say, it's like being in one of those amusement rides, the tunnel of horrors, you know? You're going to see a lot of bad things off to the side, but the end, you come out and it was all not really real. This is a little bit more real, but the ugliness is going to suddenly go away. And look what happened in England. You know, thank you, England, for the Brits standing up, going into the streets, passive resistance, going down to 10 Downing Street, and Bojo just kind of cracked and opened up the world. I mean, that's going to start. That's the first domino, maybe. And it's going to start. And I think it's not long before we get out of this. I think so.
Well, I certainly hope so. And Mark and I greatly appreciate you coming on and sharing facts and information and some hope with us on informed dissent. So thank you, Dr. Merritt. We really appreciate you coming on and look forward to following your continued efforts and your continued work as an American physician and patriot.
Well, thank you. Continue the dissent. I love it.
You've been listening to Informed Dissent with Dr. Jeff Barkey, board-certified primary care physician, and Dr. Mark McDonald, board-certified child, adolescent, and adult psychiatrist. Informed Dissent, the intersection of healthcare and politics.